This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
A good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone who is listening to Gervy's Law on the internet at KABC.com. I am Alan Gervy, and I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, here I am at Gervy's Law to be the managing partner of your life. We have an incredible show today. Unfortunately, Carrie Kasem is not here with me, but I have a wonderful co-host sitting with me. I'm excited to be with her. It's Lisa Bloom. Of course, the Lisa Bloom, civil rights attorney, employment law attorney, family law attorney from the Bloom Firm. She's also legal analyst for Avvo and the Today Show. She's a contributor to NBC Nightly News and MSNBC. Lisa, welcome to Gervy's Law.
Well, thanks for having me. What a nice introduction, Alan.
It's great to have you. It's very easy to introduce you because you've got so many things going on.
Keeps me off the streets.
It does keep you off the street, but you're very busy, and we're honored that you're here with us today. We have a great show, and we're going to talk later on in the show about sexual harassment. We're going to talk about Erin Andrews' case. Of course, this week, the $55 million award came out. Mm-hmm. I want to hear your perspective because I know you know a lot about this case and you've made a lot of commentary in the media about Erin Andrews.
Three cheers for that verdict.
I don't know about that. We'll talk about that later.
Oh, we're going to get into it.
Yes, we will. And we're also going to talk about the UC Berkeley Law School dean who's facing sexual harassment, a lawsuit, and on indefinite leave. I think that he's actually resigned.
It took him long enough to pay attention to the sexual harassment.
What an interesting guy, Sujit Chaudhary. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the unwanted and the wanted advances in the workplace. That's going to be later on. Also, we're going to talk about a case that you're working on.
We're going to talk about one of my cases for the first time. I'm going to talk about it in the media right here on this show. It's a major sexual harassment case against USC.
Wow, against USC. Mm-hmm. What is wrong with all of these schools? There's
got a
so
problem.
Much sexual harassment
We got
going
a problem on.
On
campuses. You know, we talk about sexual assault on campuses, big problem. Sexual harassment of employees on campuses, also a big problem. They really need to wake up. And it shouldn't take trial lawyers like us, Alan, to wake them up, but sometimes it does.
Absolutely, but it's a very important topic, and people have to hear about it because it could happen to you, or you could be involved in this harassment and not even realize it.
Yeah, and we can give people tips on how to handle it, too, because women always say to me, and men who can be sexually harassed, too, always say, what can I do? And I'd like to talk about that, too.
Yes. Keep your hands to yourself, Lisa, right now.
Okay.
So we're going to get a little bit serious now because we have an important event going on in our country, and I'm not talking about the Republican presidential nomination. I'm not talking about the Democratic presidential nomination. What we're talking about, the immediate issue of appointing a Supreme Court justice to the Supreme Court of the United States. And, of course, this is necessitated by the unfortunate death of Justice Antonin Scalia. And we have with us right now to talk about this process one of the foremost authorities on constitutional law, First Amendment law, free speech law, religious freedom law. He is an amazing professor. It's Eugene Volokh from UCLA Law School, and he is behind the Volokh Conspiracy, which is a blog that you should be reading on the internet. It's actually on the Washington Post now. Eugene, welcome back to Gervy's Law.
Always a pleasure to be on.
It's great to have you. We're going to jump into this right now because I know you have a lot of information. First of all, let's talk about Justice Scalia. Why is this appointment that we're facing right now, before we get into all the political issues, why is it so important to our country?
Well, the Supreme Court is right now split 4-4. Four conservatives. Justice Kennedy sometimes votes with the liberals, so do some of the other justices, but they're basically conservatives, and four liberals. Again, some of the liberal justices sometimes vote with the conservatives, but they're basically liberals. That means that whoever replaces Justice Scalia can turn the court into 5-4 liberal or keep it 5-4 conservative. That's a hugely important issue in so many matters. The right to keep and bear arms, rights of religious schools to participate in generally available benefit programs,
reproduction
about abortion rights.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking about. I mean, these are huge issues. And as lawyers, I have Lisa Bloom with me. She's often in the court, so she knows what we're talking about. We fight it out in court, but what we have to think about is the Supreme Court and how laws can change just by one decision, such as in an abortion case.
Yeah, that is surely right. Rightly or wrongly, we have a system in which, on a matter of constitutional law, the U.S. Supreme Court is basically final, and one person on the court could be the swing vote.
So tell us what Scalia represented, because we hear a lot, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but we hear people, for better, were not exactly upset about his demise. Why is that?
Well, if someone disagrees with his votes, then, any person's death is regrettable. The consequence to them is that there could be somebody else whose votes they like more. That's just human nature. That's just reality.
And if I could jump in for a moment, as somebody who's been a civil rights lawyer for the last 30 years, I certainly take no pleasure in anyone's death. But if we're talking about Justice Scalia, we're talking about a man who opposed every major civil rights case during his term on the Supreme Court. He was always on the wrong side, whether it was gay rights, women's rights, race discrimination and equality for African Americans, whatever the issue was, he was always opposed to progress and moving forward for civil rights. And that's why so many people, I think, were so unhappy with Justice Scalia on the court.
Well, surely, if you think that civil rights don't include, say, the constitutional right to keep and bear arms, if you think civil rights don't include certain aspects of free speech rights, if you think civil rights don't include equal rights for religious institutions that are excluded from generally available programs, if you don't think that civil rights include the rights of white students not to be discriminated against based on race, well, then you could say he was against civil rights. If you have a different view of civil rights, you could say that he was in favor
I would love to debate each and every one of those issues with you. We don't have time, but I'll talk about the religious issue. If we given a religious exemption to anybody who wants to discriminate in America based on sexual orientation, for example, or denying women birth control because of their religion, regardless of what the federal law requires, then we're going to have a hole so wide open in every civil rights law that you can drive a truck through it. And, I mean, the idea that there should be a religious exemption, I think, is really very disturbing. Everyone has the right to practice their religion, but they also have to follow the law. That's been the plain black-letter law for a very long time.
It's funny you should say that, because on that point, you agree entirely with Justice Scalia. Justice Scalia was the author and the swing vote necessary to bring about the important decision of Employment Division versus Smith back in 1990. What had happened was the liberals in the court, Justices Brennan, Justice Marshall, and others, had concluded that the Free Exercise Clause gives religious objectors a presumptive right to exemption from generally applicable laws. That if somebody says, I don't want to follow this law because of my religion, they're entitled to go to court and try to persuade a judge that they should get an exemption. Justice Scalia said no. He said that religious people can't get a constitutional exemption from generally applicable laws simply because of their religion.
Yeah, but that's not a case that involved discrimination, like Hobby Lobby, the case where the Supreme Court said that an employer could say, I'm not going to fund certain health insurance for birth control for women because of my religious beliefs, even if the employer employed, I don't know what the numbers were, but a very large number of people.
So Justice Scalia is the author of Employment Division versus Smith, which said there's no constitutional right to religious exemptions. Then what happened is in the 1990s, in 1993, the Congress, by unanimous vote, I believe, in the House, and by, I think, a 97-3 or so vote in the Senate, in a bill signed by the president, President Clinton, said, no, 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 we don't agree with Justice Scalia. We think that there should be a presumptive right to exemptions, and we're not going to tell you when to grant those exemptions. We're not going to exclude health care laws. We're not going to exclude civil rights laws. We're going to say this potentially applies to any federal statute, and actually they tried to do it for state and local statutes. Justice Scalia helped cut that back to only federal statutes, that for any federal statute, you go to court, and the courts then have to decide whether denying the exemption is necessary to serve a compelling government interest. So it was the Supreme, it was Congress's, at the time, I believe it was a Democratic majority Congress, a nearly unanimous Congress, that rejected Justice Scalia's views as to religious exemptions. It enacted the statute. Then it comes to the Supreme Court, and Justice Scalia has to interpret it. And he says, well, the statute's pretty broad. It seems to authorize very broad exemptions. In this instance, in fact, Hobby Lobby can get this exemption without materially interfering with employees' access to certain kinds of contraceptives because the government can provide them through other schemes. And if Congress doesn't like it, Congress can then change this religious freedom statute to exempt health care laws or exempt civil rights laws.
You know, Eugene, you make some good points. But what it comes down to, and we only have a minute before we have to take the break, talk about Scalia's interpretation of the Constitution, because we're always looking at a substantiation or a justification for a position. People say it's political. Is it political? Maybe. But how do people hold on to the principles, the interpretation of the Constitution, to the extent where they can deny individual rights?
Well, the Constitution protects some kinds of individual rights, but also protects majoritarian government. It tries to do both. So it protects individual rights, but only to a certain extent. It protects majoritarian government, but only to a certain extent. When it comes to constitutional interpretation, Justice Scalia's view was, we should try to draw those lines based on what we can tell of the original meaning of the Constitution, and if the original meaning isn't clear, based on the long-standing traditions of American people.
And the original meaning of the Constitution left out me, because I'm female,
right.
Left
isn't
out LGBT people, right?
Professor Volokh, isn't it outdated, yes or no?
Well, if it's outdated, there's a process for amending it, the Article 5 process, and if you want to, you can just have a new constitutional convention, if enough people in America are willing to do this. That can always be done. But so long as we appeal to the Constitution as supposedly that the government has to follow the Constitution because it's the law, then we can't just say, well, it's outdated, so the justices have to come up with a whole new set.
We have to justify their position some way. We need to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about the process of appointing a new Supreme Court justice. We're talking to Eugene Volokh, professor at UCLA. As you can hear, he has a lot to say and a lot of really interesting stuff. You're listening to Gervie's Law. I'm here with Lisa Bloom right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
For the best deals and the best styles of the season, get to Lumber Liquidators Spring Flooring Sale. All in-stock North American and European laminate is 10 to 20% off. Get popular styles from just 39 cents. Plus, get up to $2 a square foot off 3/4-inch solid pre-finished hardwood and pre-finished engineered hardwood from 99 cents. Get 20% off wood look tile, and all in-stock vinyl plank is on sale. Plus, deals on bamboo from $169 and 18-month special financing. The best flooring deals end Tuesday, so visit LumberLiquidators.com to find a store near you.
What's the secret to financial independence? You need a steady passive income, something more than just wages from a job. At Compound Stock Earnings, we teach you how to earn 3 to 6% cash return per month from your investments. We're so confident in your success that we offer a money-back guarantee on our Fast Start seminar. Want to learn more? Tune in to Unconventional Wisdom, the CSE Investment Show, this Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC, or visit CompoundStockEarnings.com.
Did you know 1 in 50 people has a brain aneurysm? Every 18 minutes, a brain aneurysm erupts. Half of brain aneurysms result in death. Will it strike you or someone you love? The Brain Aneurysm Foundation is the globally recognized leader in brain aneurysm education, awareness, advocacy, support, and research funding. The Brain Aneurysm Foundation, raising awareness, ending fear. To learn the facts at bafound.org. That's BAFOUND.org.
With OnStar, you don't need to drive the newest model car to have the latest in connectivity. If you're not connected, now get select OnStar services free for 3 years with no strings attached. You'll get a mobile app that lets you start your car or unlock your doors from your phone, and monthly diagnostic email reports. Just push the blue OnStar button and ask for 3 years of free mobile app and diagnostic services. Emergency and security services are not included. Eligible on select 2011 and newer vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details, coverage map, and system limitations.
For you.
Coming up on the next Drive Home with Jillian Barber and John Phillips, will recap the chaotic scene at the Trump rally in Chicago.
Plus, the woman who brought El Chapo and Sean Penn together finally speaks. We're going to talk to the man she spoke to.
Live and local, right after Dr. Drew and Psycho Mike, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes, we're back. It's Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie. I'm here with Lisa Bloom from the Bloom Firm, legal analyst of Avvo and legal analyst for the Today Show, amongst all kinds of other accolades. We're talking to Professor Eugene Volokh. Eugene Volokh is the professor of First Amendment law, free speech, tort law, religious freedom, although in our first segment he was, you know, sounding a little bit right-wing, I think. You're supposed to be laughing, Eugene.
Well, I am a little bit right-wing.
Ah, oh, you are. He's out of the closet about it.
Have you blogged on whether the Supreme Court justice should be appointed before President Obama's term ends or not?
You know, I'm not sure that there is a should here. This isn't a legal question. The Constitution makes clear that the president has the power to nominate, but he cannot appoint, I'm quoting the Constitution here, a justice of the Supreme Court without the advice and consent of the Senate. So it leaves this to be a political process. The president nominates, subject to possible political pushback based on whom he nominates, and the Senate decides whether to advise and consent.
So
and another part of the Constitution also says that the Senate as well, is the entity that makes its own rules. So if it decides to say, well, we're going to give every nominee an up and down vote within 30 days, that could be lovely. On the other hand, if it leaves it to Senate leaders to make that decision, that too is something that's authorized by the Constitution. So really, it's a political question of what is the right thing to do in this kind of situation. It's not a constitutional or legal question.
Well, Professor Volokh, I have a question for you, because you talked in the previous segment about our, you know, long-standing traditions, and that sometimes comes into it when we're interpreting the Constitution. Can you ever think of another situation in American history where the Senate said before a candidate was even nominated by the president, we're going to say no to anybody he puts up for this job. We don't care who it is. We don't care. It's going to be a no.
To my knowledge, I don't think the Senate has done that. And you could say, well, we have this tradition of at least hearing the president out. That's
showing a little respect. That's been the tradition. That's now gone.
And so I want to just jump in.
That would be a much stronger argument for the administration to make. If it hadn't been that President Obama voted to filibuster Justice Alito, he voted against Chief Justice Roberts, even though under...
Yeah, but at least they had hearings.
I understand.
Yeah, the guys spoke.
All I'm saying is that this particular administration, President Biden also spoke in 1992, saying that the Senate should reject anybody if there was a vacancy, reject anybody that President Bush proposed. It's just President Obama and Vice President Biden have not built up any real kind of political capital with the Senate, with the actions they've done.
What could they have done to do that?
Well, for starters, when Alito and Roberts had been suggested, then Senator Obama could have said, I don't agree with their views, but the fact is that the president nominated them. They seem to be very good. I'm going to vote for them, reluctantly, as opposed to filibustering one of them and voting against the other.
Is Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell supposed to be saying that right now?
I'm sorry, supposed to be saying what right now?
Exactly what you just said. Hey, here's the nomination. Here's the process. I'm respecting what you're saying because not only because you're a professor, but you're making sense. We have a process. Let's stick to the process. So why is Mitch McConnell saying that we're not going to allow the president to make the appointment? Why doesn't he sit back and say, There's a process. We'll go through the process. And if the Senate does not confirm the appointment, so be it, before the president's term is up.
Well, because this is by design, by the framers' design, this is a political process. And political processes operate with an eye towards kind of how the politics plays out. Justices aren't supposed to vote based on political considerations or partisan considerations. But senators are supposed to vote this way, and presidents are supposed to act this way. So I take it that Senator McConnell says that based on his views of what's the right policy for the nation and his views of what's going to play well with the people to whom he's ultimately responsible, that this is something that makes sense politically. And President Obama thinks, well, no, maybe I can spin it around so it'll be politically effective for me. It's just like with any vote on any other kind of bill. Why are certain bills bottled up in committee? Why are certain bills voted for? Why are certain bills voted against? It's a political process, and by design it's a political process. So, and if the voters don't like it, by the way, they can throw Senator McConnell out, and that will be...
Well, there won't be time. What exactly do you see as playing out in this process? Because we know that apparently President Obama has found approximately maybe 4 or 5 candidates who we see media attention being given to. Will one of them be presented to the Senate for confirmation?
Well, my sense is that the president will present someone to the Senate. He's going to choose someone who he thinks will produce the most political oomph for the Democrats. He is going to expect that this person probably will not be confirmed, but he's going to think that he's going to choose someone based on what he thinks will play out the best with the public.
So who would sign up for that? I mean, really, Alan, would you be willing to be the nominee under these circumstances when you know it's a definite no?
Let me ask Professor Volokh. Paul Watford, did you go to law school with him?
I know Paul quite well. He went to law school a couple of years after me, but he clerked for the same circuit court judge that I clerked for, Judge Kaczynski.
And I understand that. So is he a candidate that you would think that may have a chance?
You know, I think Paul is a brilliant lawyer and a brilliant judge. I think that he's somebody that President Obama might want to nominate. I don't think that the Senate is going to confirm him. And who knows, maybe if he's nominated now and not confirmed, then maybe at a later time, whenever the Democrats take over, whether this fall or some other time, he might be proposed again. So I think he's great, just as I thought Justice Alito and Chief Justice Roberts were great lawyers and judges. But people were willing to vote for them, and people were willing to filibuster them, which means essentially to try to block them, even though they had majority support, because they disagreed with their ideology.
What about
to Judge Watford as well?
What about Judge Merrick Garland and Srinivasan of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District?
Yeah, they have also great reputations. I don't know them personally, but by all accounts, they are very, very competent and perhaps brilliant judges, and again, that's all going to play out in the political process and see whether, on the one hand, President Obama can make a case that the Republicans are being obstructionist, on the other hand, whether Republicans can make a case saying, this is exactly why you should vote for us in November to prevent nominees like this from being confirmed to the Supreme Court.
Well, it certainly is time to have our first Asian-American justice on the Supreme Court, don't you agree?
I don't think, wait a second, I want to step in here because I don't think it matters that it's time for an Asian American. I want to see, and I don't say it shouldn't be, but I want to see the process play out. I want to see people judged on the merits, on what they've done. Professor Volokh, you say that the three that I named would be good choices potentially, but I don't want to see it being blocked by the Senate just because it's a Democratic president who's presenting the
appointment.
Well,
that's going to be happening.
Professor Volokh, is that true?
Well, if enough people share your views, then in that case, that's going to come out at the polls, and this is going to increase the Democrats' likelihood of, say, winning back the Senate and maybe winning the presidency and the like. On the other hand, if enough people say, well, no, you know, an appointment that's this important, we like the idea of having the November election be a referendum on that, and we like the idea of voting for a Republican so he can appoint someone Republican, well, then in that case, that's how it will play out.
And what about this scenario? What if we go through this process and President Obama presents to the Senate someone who's reasonable, maybe a moderate liberal with a great reputation? The Senate does not confirm, and what, like you say, we have the election and we have a Democratic senator, Senate, and a president, a Democratic president. Then what do the Republicans get? They get a left-wing Asian-American, as Lisa's saying, or someone who may be not the best candidate that the president is offering right now.
Well, I'm sure the Republicans have no problem with an Asian-American justice. What they do have a problem is with a justice who they think is going to vote on the left. I think the Republicans are obviously making a bet here. But that's what much of politics is right is like, right?
Yeah,
you
we
make
can't
a bet.
But we also
you're
can't
that
assume.
You have the oomph today to block it, and that you something better will happen in the future. Maybe something worse will. That's
The problem with the theory that we'll just vote the bums out of office if they do things we don't like is that I think very few people vote based on people's behavior when they're faced with a Supreme Court nominee. In fact, I think if you polled most Americans on where their congressperson or senator stood on a Supreme Court nominee, you'd get a very low number of people who even knew the answer to that question, much less found it to be a voting issue.
Well, you can imagine other ways of appointing justices. In fact, there are some courts that have other ways of appointing judges. In fact, some of the time they elect judges. But the way that we have has been committed to the political process, and the political process, is, with all of its warts, is exactly what we see playing out right now.
So if Trump is elected, apparently his only interest is the Heller case, depending on what the justice would consider his opinion for the Heller case. Is that enough to pick a Supreme Court justice?
Well, I'm pretty sure that if Trump is elected, then he will focus on much more than that, in part because there are lots of justices, or lots of prospective justices who have the same view on the Heller case.
And that's the Second Amendment gun case,
exactly.
For those
exactly.
who don't know.
Right.
And I would also add that I've seen Trump speaking about gay marriage, and he said he would consider appointing a justice who was opposed to same-sex marriage so that he could reverse the gains for lesbian and gay Americans that we've had in the last few years. And I think everybody should be aware of that. That's Trump's position.
So speaking of family values, I have to go and pick up my son at the bus.
That is the best line I heard all day. Last question for you. Use your crystal ball. What's going to happen?
What's going to happen? The Republicans will, in fact, block any nominee that goes up. And that the election will be something of a referendum on the court and, in fact, in part on the justice on the Republicans' actions in this respect. And what's going to happen in November, that my crystal ball is not telling me.
Professor Eugene Volokh from UCLA Law School. It's the Volokh Conspiracy. And you're on WashingtonPost.com now, aren't you?
Exactly.
That's great. So look at WashingtonPost.com, Volokh. Eugene Volokh, Volokh Conspiracy. Of course, he's the Gary T. Schwartz Professor of Law at UCLA. As usual, we love having you on Gervie's Law. Thanks very much, Professor
Volokh.
Thanks, Professor Volokh.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Lisa, wow. Those were some important issues that come out. I could have talked to him for an hour. I don't think you agree with a whole lot.
Well, you know, I have a radical perspective on this, and that is we should follow the Constitution just like Scalia would have wanted. The president should appoint a nominee, and then the Senate should vote to yes or no.
My whole issue here is doing the right thing. If the president presents a candidate who is of stellar quality, a great judge, who's moderate or whatever, there should be no reason to block that.
Well, that's what he's done so far, Justice Kagan,
we
Justice Sotomayor.
That's right. Well, I don't know about that. They may have been a little bit on the left side. But
we're going to have to talk about
but
that another time.
Sometimes we don't know. There have been a lot of justices that people thought would be a lot more conservative or a lot more liberal and have not turned out that way.
I think they've been terrific.
Anyway, you are listening to Gervie's Law. We are going to talk more with Lisa Bloom after this break.
I just feel like something's missing.
I know. What we had was so big.
And warm. And bright.
And yellow.
Oh, I really miss the sun.
No sun? No problem. Centrum, the most trusted multivitamins, now have more of the vitamin D3 you need. Get the vitamin D you could be missing this winter with Centrum Multivitamins, now our highest level of D3 ever.
person who makes or causes to be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
I'm a pair of designer shoes so expensive, my owner had to give up half-decaf skim vanilla lattes just to afford me. So you can imagine my terror when a pipe burst and the apartment started flooding. There I was, trapped in the closet, water rushing all around me. But what was I to do? I'm a 6-inch stiletto. It's not like I can run.
Your stuff can't protect itself. That's why the GEICO Insurance Agency helps make it easy to switch and save on renter's insurance. Renter's insurance will cover personal property loss or damage as well as provide liability protection. Visit GEICO.com today.
Choosy Moms Choose Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
We are back right here at Gervey's Law. It's Alan Gervey here, and Carrie is not here, but I have Lisa Bloom. Lisa Bloom is of the Bloom Firm. She is a civil rights attorney, employment law attorney, family law attorney. She does it all. She's also a legal analyst for AVO. By the way, what is AVO?
AVO is the place to go if you're looking for a lawyer. There's ratings of almost every lawyer in America. I'm sure you're on there. I'm on there, right? Client reviews, peer reviews, and it's also a great way to get very low-cost or even free legal advice, avo.com.
You know, it really is amazing these days how people find lawyers. In the olden days, and we've talked about this before, it was word of mouth. You'd call up a friend, a relative. Now you just go into your room, you take out your computer, whatever, iPad, whatever you're working
search.
On, and you just do a search, and you've got so much information at your fingertips.
Yeah, absolutely. And you want somebody who's highly rated, who has a clean bar record, and that's all on AVO. It's absolutely great.
Right. And we also have to watch out that some reviews may not be accurate. You can't take every word that a client says as gospel.
Listen, as with anything, right? If you're going to go to the movies or get a book, you're going to look at reviews. And if they're all 5-star, aren't you going to be a little suspicious?
Absolutely.
I am. I actually like to see an occasional 1- or 2-star review. It seems more authentic.
You know, I want to tell you something, and people don't realize this, but I've done a lot of scientific research. When we talk about Yelp, you look at the reviews on Yelp, and I can tell you the fake ones and the ones that aren't, as far as law firms go. The ones that are not fake always mention a name of a person, whether it's Sally the receptionist or whether it's John the attorney or Margaret the paralegal. They talk about a certain person. The ones that are fake are in general terms. Oh, this law firm is amazing. You won't believe how great they are.
That's a good little tip, Alan.
It is a great tip. So you look, when you're looking at a law firm, if there's just a bunch of general stuff and they never mention a specific name, for whatever reason, people like to put specific names when they're actually doing a review.
I haven't even looked at my law firm's Yelp ratings.
Well,
yikes.
Good.
I know. There's so much to keep up with, right?
Yeah, yeah. Ours are good. Thank goodness.
They are.
Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn. Check out the Yelp. We've got a lot of great reviews, and they're real. I guarantee
and they name
it.
Names.
They name names. They are real. We haven't put anyone up to making fake ones yet. but, you know, I want to talk about news from this week, because we're fortunate to have Lisa here. She's always in the news, on the news, with all kinds of different news media outlets. And we had a couple big stories this week. One of them, of course, was Erin Andrews recovering $55 million as a result of the peeping Tom.
Hooray!
Why are you saying hooray? I mean,
because
what did she do? She took off her clothes.
Listen, no, I don't think that's a fair explanation of the case. I've been talking about this a lot on HLN, on Dr. Drew's show, on Inside Edition, and other shows, and I really analyzed the case. Erin Andrews was surreptitiously video recorded in her hotel room. And why was the hotel liable for that? Because a strange man asked the hotel, what room is Erin Andrews staying in? And absolutely outrageously, they told him, and then they booked him in the room next to her so that he could then pull out the peephole in between the rooms and attach a camera and not just peep in at her, which would be disgusting enough, but actually record her when she was naked innocently in her hotel room, post it online, and you can never get that down for the rest of your life. And she testified, I thought, very compellingly about what it's like to be a woman in the male-dominated profession of sports, you know, announcing.
Right.
And every day somebody yells out at her from the stands some disgusting comment about her body, her being naked. People say she did it for attention. I mean, it's just disgusting. And that's going to follow her the rest of her life.
I want to ask a legal question because I accept what you just said. I want to know about this hotel. What is the proof that they did it with intention, what they knew they were doing when they put the peeper, the peeping Tom, next to them? Because I agree.
It's negligence. That's... It's not intent. It's negligence. And as
how is it
listen,
if I
it's
go,
no, it's absolutely negligent. When somebody asks, "Is Lisa Bloom staying at this hotel?" They
right.
should say, "We cannot answer that question." They shouldn't say, "Oh, she's in room 312." Would you like room 313?
How do you know that? What's his name? Barnett, Mr. Michael
the
Barnett,
the stalker. We can call
stalker,
him
the stalker, the peeper.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know that he didn't say, "I'm working with the SBN"?
Because that
I'm
was
part
not,
of.
I believe that was not a contested fact that
okay.
he asked for that information and they gave it to him, and he's since been criminally convicted.
Yeah, 2.5 years.
So listen, I think I travel a lot alone for business. I'm constantly traveling, and I think any woman who's in that position understands how absolutely, you know, shocking it is that they would do that.
Yeah, if they did that, it's horrendous.
And her emotional distress was, you know,
okay.
she wept on the stand. And
now
she,
I want to
no
talk
question
about that.
About
at least I want to talk about that. So she received an award of $55 million, which, by the way, she'll probably see perhaps a fraction. We know that half of it was from Mr. Barnett.
It was 51% to the stalker, which
right.
she's never going to collect
never
on.
See.
49% to the hotel, and I would add, and its insurance company, because
right.
we all know that's who's really behind these things.
And they're going to appeal.
And they, you know, and they're going to appeal, but they should be substantially responsible, because there's a lot of creeps out there, and a hotel legally assumes the risk for the safety and security
so
of its guests.
How do we put a dollar amount? People hear about this and they think it's outrageous, $55 million, even though if she's not going to collect. And I see my clients who are injured on the job. Some of them will never work again. They're completely incapacitated, and they're getting, you know, $400 or $500 a week, let's say. And if they are able to get a settlement, it's a few a few hundred thousand dollars. Never work again, never be able to support their family. Some of them can't pick up their children. Erin Andrews is working.
Mm-hmm.
This happened in 2008. Hasn't she done Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah,
or whatever?
Her career has definitely improved since then, although I would argue she's a very talented, hardworking person. Her career might have improved anyway. She was on the upswing before this. But you're right. I mean, let's get real. A lot of people suffer emotional distress or physical injuries, and they don't get anywhere near this award. I say let's bring the other numbers up. Let's not bring this one down. Look, we're talking really about $26 million. That's what was assessed
right.
against the hotel. There will be an appeal, and probably there will be a settlement, because that's how most cases end. That I would say, you know, if she gets half of that $26 million, and then that would be a lot. And then her attorneys are going to get their share, whatever that is, probably a third or 40%. A huge chunk is going to go to taxes. And then she'll end up walking away with a
yeah.
third of whatever the final number is, which, you know, maybe $5 million, something
maybe,
like that.
Maybe, whatever. I don't doubt that this has been a horrible, horrible experience for her. But I think we need to keep this in perspective. We saw her naked, and those of us who saw the video, and, yeah, I mean, it was terrible invasion of privacy, and the hotel should be liable. But she's still, I mean, who's she dating?
I'm never good at who celebrities are dating.
I thought it was Jarrett Stahl from The King.
I don't know. But, you know, if you had seen her with the tears in her eyes talking about her life, her mother testifying how, you know, damaging and upsetting
right.
this is to
yeah.
her, when she has children, her children will be able to go online
yeah.
one day and see this. It will never go away.
I don't
that's
doubt
what
it.
Drove the big
okay,
number.
Okay, let's talk about the UCLA Berkeley Law School dean whose name is Sujit Chowdhury, who has taken an indefinite leave. This also broke this week for sexual harassment charges by his former executive assistant, and that was Tyann Sorrell, who alleged in a lawsuit from September 2014 to March 2015, Chowdhury made unwanted sexual advances, including kisses and bear hugs that pressed her body against his.
Ugh.
Now, this is Berkeley Law School Dean, and this guy is impressive. If anyone wants to take a look at Wikipedia, and, you know, that's the source of information now. There's no reason to actually get real information. Just go to Wikipedia. The guy was a Rhodes Scholar. He went to Oxford, Toronto, University of Toronto in my hometown, home country of Canada, Harvard Law School, McGill in Montreal. I mean, an educated guy. What? Why is he fooling around while he's doing his job?
But, Alan, you should never confuse brains with character. A lot of people are very, very smart people, and they do a lot of very, very bad things. And this guy, being a law school dean,
Bill Clinton?
You know, we could come up with a very, very long list, right? But this guy's very smart. He's a law school dean. I'm going to assume he knew the law of sexual harassment, which, if we can just state it very simply, is don't paw your assistant. Get your hands off of her. Instead, for 6 months, he's all over her. Are you kidding me? She complains. And then his big punishment from the school is a 10% pay cut. I mean, is there any more of a slap on the wrist than that?
And that's a good point, because originally what the school did was they talked about a 10% pay cut, and they were doing an investigation.
Oh.
You know, they encouraged counseling at his own expense.
Encouraged.
At his own expense, he had to pay for the counseling.
Okay.
I mean, and an apology.
Let me tell
you. This is Berkeley.
So,
can't they figure this out? Law school.
Well, but this is, listen, I do a lot of sexual harassment cases, and we're going to talk about one of my clients in the next block. And this is what I see over and over again. Whatever the institution is, it wants to circle the wagons and protect the guy in power. And in this case, the woman was an executive assistant, translation, a relatively powerless person, a person not high up in the hierarchy of the place. And they want to protect him, and they don't really care. And so now this is all coming out.
Right.
You know, and now they're publicly embarrassed, as they should be, because they should have handled this.
And they granted Sorrell, the executive assistant, a fully paid administrative leave.
Oh, wow.
Wasn't that nice?
You know, I'm sure she would rather have her job. And, you know, I'd rather have her job and not be sexually harassed, breaking news, is the legal right of every working person in America.
That's true. But then we talk about the definition of what really is sexual harassment. We're going to talk a little bit more about that when we come back. We're here with Lisa Bloom. It's Gervie's Law. Don't miss the next segment. You're listening to Talk Radio 790 KBC.
To be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
Many are wondering if I plan to run in this year's big race. If I do, I promise I will build a wall, a rock wall, and your children can climb it. Together, we can raise funds to benefit youth fitness and education. That's why I'm officially announcing that I will run in this year's Newport Mesa Spirit Run, Sunday, March 20th.
The Newport Mesa Spirit Run is back.
Sunday, March 20th at Fashion Island Newport Beach.
Enjoy a morning of fitness and fun for the entire family, including a toddler trot, six races for kids 4 to 14, and an adult 5K, 10K, and 15K. Plus, breakfast, live music, a rock climbing wall, and a surf simulator.
Event profits benefit youth fitness and education.
There'll be no losers, only winners.
Register now at KABC.com/spirit.
It's gonna be huge.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, well, you're listening. Lisa Bloom and I are dancing in the studio. What music? Come on, we got to replace that.
That's
Lisa,
from back in the day,
I
Alan.
I know. It's coming
back around and getting hip again, I think.
Can we get hip? You are hip.
Well, I don't know about that.
Lisa is the founding partner of the Bloom Firm, and she is a sexual harassment specialist in the law, that is. And we're going to talk a little bit now about one of your cases. Tell us about a case that you're working on that deals with sexual harassment.
Well, I'm very proud to represent Natalie Gossett. And Natalie Gossett worked at a biomedical institute at USC. And we can bring her in and have her tell the story herself. But like so many of my clients, Natalie alleges that she was sexually harassed in the workplace. And after she complained, she was retaliated against. Her job responsibilities were taken away, and ultimately she lost her job. And that's a very, very common fact pattern for women. So common, in fact, that a lot of women don't speak out about sexual harassment in the workplace because they're afraid that's exactly what's going to happen to them.
Yeah, and that is something that's like a double whammy. It's like you're getting sexually harassed, and if you open your mouth, it gets worse.
And it's completely unlawful. The law protects everyone who makes a good faith complaint of discrimination or harassment in the workplace. And I encourage everyone, if you feel that you're experiencing that, make a complaint in writing, just the facts, state what happened, keep a copy, very important. And if you get terminated, that piece of paper, that complaint, is going to be Exhibit A in your lawsuit.
So we have Natalie Gossett on the line now. Natalie, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Natalie.
Hello, Lisa.
It's so good to talk to you, and I know you haven't done any media interviews about this before, and you might be a little bit nervous, but just in a very succinct form, can you talk about what you experienced at USC?
Yes. The most acute event I experienced was when I was pulled into Jonathan Lash's office. He was my supervisor, and told me that I had been very wrong to interrupt him and then go and take a shower afterwards.
Hmm.
What does that mean?
So you blocked him from having an intellectual orgasm, and you should be quiet and go take a shower. And Natalie, how did you understand that? What did you think that meant?
To me, Mandy, he was having an ejaculation, and he was using me as the recipient of it.
And this wasn't the first incident, right?
No, there has been an escalation of very gross sexual metaphors that Jonathan Lash had used in meetings, and especially after he started dating his girlfriend, whom he has separated from for a while, but he would bring his bedroom life into the meetings, commenting about, you know, the positions he had taken, whether it was a fork or the spoon, and, you know, the reaction from his girlfriend.
So sexual positions you're talking
wow.
about.
Wow.
Yes,
and he said this,
yeah.
Natalie, he said this out in the open? This was...
Yeah. His comment to my reaction when I got really traumatized was that we are a medical institute, and then you assume we were all desensitized to talking about this kind of topic.
Right, which, by the way, if I can jump in, legally is ridiculous. And I hear this a lot. You know, oh, it's the restaurant industry. Oh, it's the brokerage industry.
Right.
Well, in our industry, everybody does it. Guess what? There's no exception in the sexual harassment laws for any particular industry. So, Natalie, because we only have a little bit of time, tell us about your complaining within USC and then getting terminated, what you allege there.
Yeah. So I got really sick physically to a point I could not go drive to work without crying and falling apart. So I went to the HR director, senior director, who is the point of contact recommended by USC when there is mm-hmm. a case like this. And she told me that Jonathan Lass had told her that I was going to go and see her, and she didn't know about what, but she told me that Jonathan Lass had told her that his sexual comments were too far out, and upset someone to let him know.
Mm. Wow.
The next day she did a 180-degree day and told me that I must have misunderstood, that there must have been someone else upsetting me in the room and not my supervisor. She sent me home, you know, for 2 days because I seemed to be upset.
And then how long after that were you terminated? Let's start with your responsibilities taken away, and then you were terminated.
Yeah, so I started losing projects within 2 or 3 months after that. In fact, my supervisor barely talked to me or avoided me or was kind of aggressive in the way he talked with me. And then I started losing some huge projects that I had worked on very hard. They were passed on to my colleagues with no transition. It was like, it's time to let it go and pass it on to the other person. And then I was eventually terminated.
And you'd worked there for 12 years, right?
I worked there for 12 years, yeah. And when I complained to the HR person, Susan Cooper, that I was getting really bullied by my colleagues. They were attempting to really make life very difficult for me. She just said that I had father and daughter issues.
Oh, that's nice.
And I needed to go and resolve those.
Oh, so, Natalie, I'm so sorry that you had this experience. It's just awful. And as I say, I'm very proud to represent you because this is what I see, Alan, happening over and over again. You wouldn't believe it in 2016, the stories of women and men, but mostly women, who come into my office. We have to have tissues in every conference room, in every office, because it's just devastating not only to be sexually harassed and to feel like you have to go to work and put up with this, or if you complain, maybe you're going to get fired. But then to lose your job. And Natalie is the breadwinner for her family.
It's a horrible story. We only have a minute and a half. Tell us where you go from here with Natalie's case.
Well, we have filed a case on her behalf in arbitration because she had signed an arbitration agreement like many people have. And we're very confident that we're going to prevail. They also did an investigation, took a very long time, a lot like UC Berkeley. And it's a very scant investigation. They didn't even respond to most of her claims. And so, you know, they didn't talk to Natalie, for example. You think you're doing an investigation, you might
want to
talk to the complaining witness. But they didn't do that. And so we're going to fight for her because I believe that women should have the equal right to go to work and not be sexually harassed. And if they do complain, they're exercising their legal right and they should be protected. And that's what the law says.
Natalie, I want to thank you for telling your story. And we're going to keep updated from your attorney, Lisa Bloom, on what goes on from this point forward. And hopefully there'll be justice in your case.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Natalie.
Thank you.
Lisa, that's really something. I know you have a lot of these cases. We'd love to have you back so we could talk about more of them. It's a fascinating subject, but we've got to end it for today.
Thank you. It's been
a great show.
I salute every woman who stands up. I really do.
Thanks for being on Gervie's Law today. And all you out there, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Alan.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie & Wynn.